This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Dave is back choosing theme music. We're going to have some, I have a feeling we're going to have some songs leading into the segments today going along with our theme. Hey, welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne here on KYKN. It is a pleasure to be back with you on this fantastic Willamette Valley Day. Here where we talk about issues and individuals and ideas and institutions having to do with your life here in the Mid-Valley. Things that affect your pocketbook, your quality of life, and all those good things. Sometimes it's just darn fun. We try to bring to light some of the things that you can do and see in the Mid-Willamette Valley. We got a fun guest here today, Dave. I came across him at the home show in the fall.
Really?
He's working his own booth, and it was about closing time, and I'm sure he wanted to get out of there. There was probably some football to be watched.
And you trapped him.
I did. I said, oh, hi. Let's talk a little bit. And anyway, it looks great. It looks very interesting to me, and I instantly bought his book. So I bought his book, took it, and I said, by the way, if I reach out, will you come on the radio show? So with us in the studio today, we have Steve Arndt. author, Oregon author extraordinaire, I would say. So he's got a number of books that is so detailed, it's unbelievable. It's like, I'm pretty sure this man has no life outside his books. Steve, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much.
So the reason I say that, so Steve has a whole series of books called Road Less Traveled in Oregon, and each book in the series covers a different area, and everything is detailed meticulously as far as what you can go, where you can go, what you can see all over the state. What a great resource for people that want to explore the state if they just moved here or they have more time on their hands than they used to or they retired. But yeah, I couldn't wait to talk to him. Steve, thanks for being here and sharing a little bit about your books. This must be a passion of yours.
It truly is. It's when we first got married, we did this. We didn't have much money, so we would just travel around these back roads, seeing what we could see and learning what we could learn.
So when you first got married a couple of years ago?
Oh, gosh, like 42, okay. 43? Okay. Don't tell my wife, 42 or 43.
All right. Well, let's start. Let's tell the listener a little bit about the books.
Sure.
You have how many books?
There are 13 now.
13 books. And I noticed when we're going to talk, you have one just about an interesting Oregon facts, and you have three volumes on ghost towns.
Actually, now four. Four on Oregon ghost towns. And then eight on the back roads of Oregon. They are self-guided tours, family car, motorhome friendly roads. The focus is what to see and do, not only in these places, but between places.
Wow. All right, so anywhere you want to go to Oregon, you've traveled it.
We've pretty much been around the state.
Nice.
All right, so you said when we got married. So your wife has been with you on this whole... adventure.
My wife is the official photographer.
Oh, excellent.
And she actually gets more comments than I do on the positive side.
Oh,
for
so
her photos.
She's the
in my text.
Your name's
yes.
on the book, and she's the talented one.
I know that. That's
all
correct.
Right.
As long as you know where your place is, right?
That's right.
All right. So when did you publish your first book?
Oh golly, in 2003. Well, I was a professor in my last life, and I was eligible for sabbatical, and I was going to write a second textbook. The absolutely worst thing I've ever done in my life was write the college text. Mm. I used it for my class. It was a bestseller at Warner Pacific, but nowhere else. Well, anyway, because I had written that that textbook, I got to go out of field for my sabbatical. I just love Oregon. My wife and I took a trip around the north side of Mount Hood. Now, historically, the south side was where Barlow had his trail from the Dalles to Oregon City. The Native Americans had a trade route that ran on the north side, and for whatever reason, my wife and I drove that route. I did some research on that, and had the pioneers taken that route, it would have saved weeks of time. The route from the Dalles to Oregon City was the worst 90 miles on the entire Oregon Trail. And there's a thing called, or a place called Laurel Hill. It's sheer rock, quarter mile drop down the face of boulders. They had to lower wagon trains down by ropes. It would take days just to do this quarter mile. Well, anyway, this north side was a Native American trade route. So the Native Americans would travel this road, and it's still there today, almost in the same form, other than today it's graveled.
Oh, wow.
Taking that trip, for whatever reason, I started doing some research. It literally led to the 8-book series that followed.
Wow, that is amazing. So we have Roads Less Traveled by Steve Arndt. And it details, so you look at it and you're like, I bought the book that is kind of Polk County and south,
yes.
Lincoln City, Polk County, and I think it goes down to maybe the Newport area, right? And every metropolis, shall we call it, in that whole region has been traveled through, and it has everything that there is to see in that area, right?
Correct.
So which is the one that covers primarily, that we would see Marion County in?
Well, actually, Marion County would be in both Volume 1 and Volume 2. Because the roads cross over one another, but the two books are totally separate and unique, one from the other.
Hmm. So was it the experience on the north side of Hood that ignited the desire to write more about the less traveled part of Oregon?
It just opened my eyes to an opportunity, and we laid out all of the things that we talk about. So we decided, well, what do we need to know about Alcee? Mm-hmm. So I set out, okay, so now, and where do I want to go from Alcee to? So we first then said, okay, Alcee, how was it named? Mm-hmm. We need to find information on how it was named. When did the post office open? What are some crazy weird things about Alcee that most people won't know about?
Where'd you get all the data?
Oh my gosh, I was so lucky being in a college. I had access to every library and university in the entire West Coast. Wow. The Historical Society. There is not a museum, historical society that we have not been into, and people were generous in their knowledge and sharing it with me. Mm-hmm. And boy, I have tape recorders, so I tape recorded people, and I spent a year just traveling, doing this book and the Northwest one, and then the Southwest.
Wow. It seems like when you travel, you're driving through, if you're on the back roads, there's always a place with, there's a museum. And you're like, there's
in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, yes. In the middle of nowhere. There's a museum here. And you're looking around, right? And like, there's sheep and there's broken barns. And, you know, you've been in that place.
We have.
Right?
One of the most unique was a little place called Trail, Southern
Trail.
Oregon.
Okay.
The museum was the old bar. So you walk into the barn today, but it is the museum.
So in these travels is where you came across finding ghost towns.
Yes.
Towns that are dead, right? And we're gonna talk about that after the break, so we have a long time to talk about it. Because that fascinates me. When you have a town and you have an enterprise and you have a home, a homestead and a home for certain families, and then poof, it's gone. Everyone has died off or moved out. And all that. So we're gonna talk about that. So just to give the listener an idea, you know, this each page will list a town like Airlie. Is that how you pronounce that?
Airlie, right? Correct.
Okay. P.D. P.D.?
P.D.
P.D.
Named for P.D., Tennessee.
So Steve.
Wow.
He knows that right off the top of his head. He doesn't have the resource.
Well, he wrote the book.
Yeah. But it gives you the elevation. It gives you the latitude and longitude. It gives you what you think you're lost. You can find it on your GPS. It tells you what services are available, whether or not you're going to have food or gas, or did it have lodging.
Helpful.
Things to see, historical things, a little bit of history, how it got its name, maybe some Native American information in it, some of the institutions. It's fascinating. Roads Less Traveled. traveled. Steve Arndt is here with us today at the Noon Hour on Newsmakers. We're going to talk about ghost towns in Oregon right after the break. Stick with us. You're listening to 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart in studio with Dave Bourne. And our guest today is Steve Arndt, author of Roads Less Traveled in Oregon, and all nine books that cover the gamut of the state. So we were talking just before the break about ghost towns, which fascinate me. And so you said you've added a fourth volume of ghost towns in Oregon, right?
Correct.
So how many ghost towns do we have, for goodness sakes?
Golly, back in 2014, I read an article that Oregon had more ghost towns than any other state. In honesty, I was excited for about 20 seconds because my wife and I know the state about as well as anyone, and I didn't think we had more than anyone. I couldn't place in our travels 254.
254 ghost towns.
That's a lot.
Well, I would think of things like Wyoming or even California because of the gold rush and the bust and all that. But
is that because most people traveled here in the early West? And then they may have moved on?
Well, several things. One is the gold. Oregon had two gold rushes. We had a gold rush in the Northeast and also another one in the Southwest. And they occurred at about the same time in the 1860s. Came in, took all the gold, abandoned
the town,
homes, and so on. But the definition of ghost town is the interesting thing here. When I think of a ghost town, it's pretty much like you two gentlemen. Nobody lives there. Mm-hmm. Oregon only has about 40 or 50 of those. A ghost town is any community with a significant loss of population. Now, first of all, what does that mean?
Right.
That is so nebulous and broad that I think we have manufactured the definition or played on that definition to bring people into our state to witness or visit places that truly aren't what I would call a ghost town.
Yeah, would Detroit qualify under that definition after the recession, after GM?
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Okay.
So one of the things I have done in my ghost town books is I use the accepted definition, which is very complicated and complex, and then I have made my own simple 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 classification. A one is a true ghost town. No one lives there. There's empty buildings that still stand. A two is a near ghost town. There can be a handful of people, but the majority of the buildings are empty. A five is historically significant, but does not qualify in my definition to be a ghost town.
Close.
It could be the significant loss of population.
Right.
Paisley is considered a ghost town by definition.
Where is that?
Eastern Oregon, way south, has a high school of 50 kids. But there are empty buildings downtown, but people that live in Paisley would argue that they're certainly not a ghost town.
That'd be like North Salem.
Exactly. Valsetts is considered a ghost town. There is nothing left of Valsetts.
Uh-huh.
So empty places where things once were, that's ghost not a town. Ghost town to me. There has to be empty buildings to qualify. So I'm much more strict, and I talk about that in my preface and in my definitions.
All right, so how many ones? There's some structures, but nobody's really living there.
Exactly. I'm claiming about 45 to 50 across the state of Oregon.
Wow, even that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Those are the exciting ones.
All right.
How about a historical sign on the side of the road that says, this was the place of a town?
To me, that's a five. That's historically significant.
And there's no buildings or anything there left.
That's a five.
And there's one on 219. I drive by it every day.
There's a bunch of those. And by definition, they do qualify to be called a ghost town.
Huh.
And you're going to find those in my book called The Compendium. So people that are metal detector bottle hunter folk, they want to know where the places once were that are now completely gone. And so that's the market for this book. the family car group is the 150 called the first three volumes. Okay. And all of these, every photograph is something that still stands today.
Hmm. A Compendium of Oregon Ghost Towns by Steve Arndt. By the way, you can get any of Steve's books at roadslesstraveledoregon.com. You can also, in case you want to be part of his research and add to his data, if you know of a town or a factoid that he should include in his publications, roadslesstraveledoregon.com. You just buy the books directly. All right. So, all right, I got so many questions about ghost towns. All right. Let's pick a ghost town. Who owns the land now? It used to be owned by somebody. There were settlers or something, or farmers. They walked away. Who owns the land now?
Great questions. Let me give you an example of my favorite ghost town and then my second favorite ghost town.
Okay.
And my favorite ghost town is the community of Flora. It is up by the Washington State border, Hell's Canyon area. Probably 20 to 22 empty buildings still standing. There's a schoolhouse, there's a church, there's a blacksmith shop, there's a bank that is incredibly preserved. The lots are owned by individuals. They pay their taxes just like you and I pay our taxes on our properties. And they're the ones who are upkeeping those old buildings.
Wow.
And they have done a fantastic job of doing that. Unfortunately, other places don't have the finances, people don't have the resources, people are going in and entering these, and unfortunately, people are being sued, not by the people that are breaking in mm-hmm. to their homes, because they get hurt, and it's not the homeowner, it's the homeowner's responsibility for people that break into their homes.
Yeah.
That's wrong. So
that is wrong.
It is, but the people are tearing the buildings down to protect themselves from lawsuits. So it's
wow, that's a shame.
And that was the next question is actually if you have an owner, if you have a known owner, if there's a problem with trespassing, like who would know you're in the backwaters of Oregon and who's watching and people can trespass or squat, right?
Exactly. It's tragic, I think, that these buildings are being torn down because the wrong people are trying to enter and take things that don't belong to them. When there's photo opportunities, there's the history. Just standing next to these places, I get goose pimples today.
Well, going back to the ghost town in Hell's Canyon, that was called what?
Flora.
Flora. Are there any commercial services there? Is anybody maintaining a gift shop? No museum?
Nothing.
Nothing.
A true ghost town, but nothing there.
But the owners are still maintaining that the buildings are still standing.
Correct.
Wow.
The couple of people that live in the area open the schoolhouse in the summer. So you can go into this three-story building that once held 200 and some children that is completely empty today. The church, they're trying to restore, but they don't have enough money. And I'm afraid it will tip with a good snowpack, will be gone in a year or two.
Any good ghost stories from that?
Any ghosts in the ghost town?
Yeah,
yes,
that's the next logical question, no, right?
And you're right on. I am not a sensitive, and I say that in sincerity. I attended the Oregon Ghost Town Ghost Conference, which is held annually in Seaside. There were people that would take my book and go through the pages and say, there's activity here. We can sense this. We can do activity here, and they can sense it. I don't have the feel. There is a place in Jacksonville, Oregon. It's a bed and breakfast today called the Magnolia Inn. 120 years ago, it was a home for the aged, the addled, and the infirmed. They had shock therapy on the second floor. Patients died as a result of shock therapy. That is the room I asked for. So I slept in that room, and I slept soundly. Nothing was, my hair didn't stand up. I went back with my wife. She said there's eerie, she didn't want to even go in the front door.
Wow.
She could sense things. And there are people that will say they won't even walk on the same side of the street as the Magnolia Inn due to
Jackson, Oregon.
Yes, Jacksonville, Oregon.
Oregon.
Yes.
Superstitious, probably.
Who knows?
Wow. Yeah. All right, so people abandon these. What's the most prevalent reasons why the town got abandoned?
The most common in Oregon is the gold rush.
Okay, came, got the gold out, time to move on.
And they just totally, they made enough money they could just abandon the buildings and leave.
Okay, so back to the question, when they abandon, obviously they're not paying property taxes. So some of these ghost towns, have they been taken over and now owned by the county for back taxes or...
Brett, I honestly don't know some of that.
It's another book.
Yes, I truly believe that's the case because back in the 1860s, 1870s, when gold first started playing out, they didn't have property tax. So the ownership, they staked the claim and they abandoned it. So I don't know what the process is of going through and claiming an abandoned mine or abandoned.
Well, now we're going to have to spend a lot of time in county clerk's offices,
right?
Well, counties keep all the property records,
right? But would it be the county or would it be the state that they could possibly take it over as a historical site?
Well, the state has in a couple cases done that.
Okay,
probably one of the most famous is Golden. Golden is about 3 miles from Wolf Creek. Mm-hmm. So if people have been to Wolf Creek, they have been 3 miles from my second favorite ghost town, state of Oregon.
Okay, Golden.
Golden. There are 7 buildings that still stand. There's a church, a schoolhouse, the general store is still there. It was the site of the first 4 years of Gunsmoke episodes. Gunsmoke was filmed here.
Nice. Really?
Yes.
All this time,
factoids I thought it was you didn't know.
Carson City.
All right.
We have to break. And I have been, I've been to Wolf Creek. I've been to one place that Steve Arndt has been. spent my wedding night there. We'll talk about that in just a minute. You're listening to Newsmakers talking about Marion Polk County. And today we are talking with Steve Arndt, author of Roads Less Traveled in Oregon. Stay with us. This is Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Trailers for sale or rent. Rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes.
He's in here singing.
2 hours of pushing room by.
What a great song. Hey, welcome back to Newsmakers. Boy, we can go a couple hours on this theme. We're talking to Steve Arndt, author of Roads Less Traveled in Oregon. And I want to wrap up a couple things that we have been talking about. Wolf Creek down in southern Oregon, just off I-5. There's an old inn there, a historic inn. And there was Golden, right? It's nearby there.
3 miles.
Tell me what you told us during the break.
Gosh, well, Golden was a gold rush community. The church there... There was a real strict Campbellite minister who would not allow the miners to cuss, dance, drink, smoke, gamble, or whatever. So all the money went to Wolf Creek on Saturday night.
Uh-huh.
Gold played out maybe 7 years after the town abandoned.
And the cemetery.
Anyway, the cemetery. Well, Gunsmoke was filmed there for the first 4 years. It was on television. The cemetery, which is right next to the church... is a phony one. And I wrote AAA. I probably shouldn't say this on the air, I guess. But I told them about the phoniness, and they didn't believe me. They retracted the story 12 years later, but didn't give me credit. And they said, yes, it's true. But it's too rocky. They can't put bodies in a cemetery where it's all basalt.
Right. Yeah. It was used for Gunsmoke, you said.
Gunsmoke. So it's
was filmed there.
And they're wooden. They're wooden headstones with names on them.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my gosh. There's probably some very funny inside jokes in there somewhere. Yes. All right. So Steve has written Roads Less Traveled and also a compendium of Oregon ghost towns and also this book, Oregon Uncommon Facts and Unique Information. How many of these facts can you just list off? I mean, this is amazing. You talk about Trivial Pursuit of Oregon. You can make it just an Oregon chapter. Just
there's a game in there somewhere.
There we go. So here's an easy one for you, Dave.
Okay.
Where is the largest Irish retailer in the state?
No idea.
Well, Iris, we all know Kaiser's Iris Festival, so it's...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Pick one that was here.
Credit Shriners. I mean, Shriners.
Okay.
Right? Shriners,
Snyder's. I can't remember. Yes.
All right. North of Salem. So
yes,
I accidentally came across a couple of these fun factoids that have to do with this area. But and pertinent this week, which counties produce the most of Oregon's wines? Of course, we think Yamhill County and Washington County, of course. Polk County's number three. Right across the river, right?
Nice.
Polk County is number three in production of Oregon's wines. So it's funny because we were just been talking about wines this week. So so welcome, Steve. You were a professor and you taught kids and young individuals to teach.
To become teachers.
What a great thing. And then on your times off, and you started this during a sabbatical and writing these books.
Correct, in 2003.
And when did it snowball? And so this is your passion. And hey, honey. you and your wife's like, this is all we're going to do.
Was it 2008 that the economy tanked?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 8 and 9, yep.
Right around there. Well, and I was telling you during the break, I had a publisher my first 4 years in the business. And I went to his home. I took him with me to show him how I got my information. Was his house guest for 3 days doing the Northeast book. Well, I finished the book, I sent it off to him, and he sat on it for a year.
What?
That's gonna be frustrating.
Well, anyway, I finally called him and I says, you know, it's been too long. I want to get on with my next. I'm gonna dissolve our partnership. Oh, and he says, oh, I'm so sorry, Steve. I really meant to get to you. You were next on the line, next mm-hmm. on the line.
Yeah, sure.
Well, anyway, my pastor was at a bookstore in Eastern Oregon. And he came home a week later. He says, Steve, there's someone publishing your books or books just like yours. Well, this fellow, he didn't copy me, but he borrowed all my ideas, put them in different orders, and was writing books just like mine.
Uh-oh.
Wow.
And that's why he didn't have time for me.
That is a sad story.
Well, anyway, the good news, I found a young man. He was a family friend, grew up with my son as a little boy, who has forgotten more about computers than I will ever know. He is my new graphic designer. We have a better product than we ever had. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me in hindsight.
Oh, well, good. Glad it worked out. Now we're 9 volumes later, and anything you want to know about anywhere in Oregon. Are there areas of Oregon that you're familiar with or that you know about but you can't really get to? There's no paved road there anymore or grab unpaved road there anymore. Is there any places that, used to be a place there, but that logging road or that forestry road or whatever's closed?
Yes, there are many of those, and those are the books or the ghost towns you're going to find in the compendium.
Oh, okay.
In fact, some of those I have not been to. My wife would not let me take our car on those roads.
That was my next question.
Yes, and we have high clearance, the RAV, and in honesty, I didn't want to drive on them. They're pretty bad.
Huh. Hmm.
Some of them require hiking into. There are ghost towns out there. Hmm. Bohemia City is a real good example, which is down out of Cottage Grove. But it's really hard to get to.
How did the settlers get there then?
Well, these weren't settlers. These were perhaps Cottage Grove settlers, and they were exploring, looking for gold.
Oh.
So this was a gold mining community.
Got it.
And people don't realize Bohemia City, the Cottage Grove area, is the more gold came out of that area than any other part of the state. It is the longest continuously running gold mine in the state of Oregon, and it's still operational.
Wow.
In the same area.
Well, I had no idea. All right, so that answers that question as far as how you get to. You get to mountain bike. You think some of these things would be a mountain biker's dream.
They're nasty. Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so who's going to update all your data? Is there a mechanism to get it updated over time?
The roads less traveled, we try to redo about every 7 to 8 years.
Okay.
With the ghost towns, I've only had them in print about 4 years. So they're relatively right on. There is a place called, my mind just left me. But one of the buildings burned down last summer when all those fires came through in the high grasslands outside of in Wasco County, Charlie Nelson House. It was allegedly the most photographed old building in the state of Oregon. It's rubble today.
Wow. Well, at least we got pictures of it, right?
Yes.
Yes, so I remember that.
At what point did you start using GPS? Now, in the books, in the less traveled books, you know, you might be in a small town and you're going to go to, because it's all about getting from here to there. And then you're cataloging how far it is and what's in between and how far they are.
Correct.
Ah, that's a lot of work.
This was the probably the most difficult part of the writing the books. It's catching what to see and do to the tenth of a mile between location A to the next location B. And there were times my wife and I had to run that same 15, 20, 25 miles a dozen times because I would get excited about seeing something and my mileage would get off. I'd have to start over again because we wanted the mileage to be as accurate as possible to the tenth.
Wow.
Wow, that's impressive.
And, of course, all the even all those little towns, he's got the latitude and longitude, so you can get exactly there. That's
so amazing. You could airdrop in then.
RoadsLessTravelledOregon.com by Steve Arndt. So what surprised you the most that you didn't expect to find in Oregon? You mentioned the two gold rushes, the Northeast and the Southwest, and that they created all these ghost towns. I know sometimes I learn something about Oregon. I had no idea. First time I was in, you know, where the Rajneesh used to be, mm-hmm. which is now a Young Life Christian youth camp, and that whole area, Antelope Valley, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Used to be like a sheep capital. I mean, just massive amounts of sheep, unparalleled.
Hmm.
And
they still live out in the Dalles, and I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Shantico was the wool.
Shantico, yeah.
Yeah, was the wool capital of the world. You were asking about things that I didn't know prior. There is a little ghost town 2 miles south of Shantico that people don't know about. It's called Cross Hollows.
Hmm.
Cross Hollows was a thriving little community. The railroad played an important part in communities making it or breaking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Railroad came through, was going to come through Cross Hollows, but it's in a little canyon. So if you know Shantico at all, you have to drop south to get to Antelope. The railroad couldn't get down to Cross Hollows. It ran 3 miles north. As the railroad came through, people moved their homes from Cross Hollows up to the new community of Shantico. Because of the grass, which was 2 and 3 feet high, sheep came in. One thing led to another. It became the wool capital of the world. And some of those old buildings, like the sheep barn, still stand in the community.
And is that where they sheared and created what became Pendleton wool?
I don't know if it was Pendleton wool, but much of the wool ended up going to Pendleton for sure.
And what caused that town to not be there anymore?
Couple things. One, faster transportation.
Okay.
The grass that was 2 and 3 feet high was chewed down. When sheep eat, I understand they eat roots.
Yeah, they eat it all the way down.
A cow will leave the roots. And so once that grass was gone, it didn't come back.
Mm.
And so just naturally over time, and the amount of wool used today isn't as great as it was because of all the synthetic fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
So it naturally just kind of died.
Yeah.
Wow. You're listening to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're talking to Steve Arndt, author of Oregon Roads Less Traveled. And I found him at a home show, but you can find him online at roadslesstraveledoregon.com and pick up any of the books. If you're going to travel, you want to make a summer vacation, you want to see everything and anything about any region of Oregon, Steve's been there. Stick with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome back to Newsmakers.
Thank you, Dave. This is Brent DeHart, our guest in the studio, Steve Arndt, author of Roads Less Traveled in Oregon. It's hard to give the radio show a feel for what the book is actually like. So I'm going to describe this a little bit and how this section goes. Starting on this random page with Carlton, Oregon. It gives you elevation, some how it was founded, how they named it, and so forth. There's pictures of historic buildings. There's factoids about the buildings there and when they were built and what used to be there. But then it's like, well, when you go from Carlton to Lafayette, from Lafayette to McMinnville, from McMinnville, you go to Bellevue. From Bellevue, I mean, you get on your way to the coast, say, to Sheraton, of course.
So if you get the book,
more of Sheraton than the
So if you're business. Traveling and you can take the book with you, you could look at the pictures and go, okay, that's the building. That's we're in the right place. That's good to know.
Yeah, 1890s in Oddfellows Hall in Willamina. Right, and they go to Willamina to Blaine, and it gets smaller and smaller as you move to the coast, and Beaver, and of course Hebo on your way to Cloverdale and Pacific City. So, and then there's along the way, there's every tenth of a mile. If there is something to be seen, you know, you're hopefully your navigator is telling you, well, on the right, hey, do you know that farmhouse? You know, it's
that's good.
A governor was born there, or whatever the fact is of the time.
And you were telling me during the break, Steve, that. You could take a family car on most of these trips, right?
We try to make these family car, motorhome, and motorcycle friendly. A lot of the history is on the paved road. It isn't up on these four-wheel drive only up in the mountains.
Right.
So my focus is family car friendly access.
Good.
Wow. So tell me, back to Ghost Towns and your publication on Ghost Towns, because you have four.
He's obsessed.
You have four volumes of Oregon Host, and it's beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
And the pictures are fantastic on the cover here. And then you have the compendium. Which one should I buy?
It depends on you. And I say that in seriousness. If you are have a family car and you are exploring Oregon and don't worry about getting on back paved roads, then you want the one, the larger 8.5 by 11, because these are family car, motorhome accessible.
Right.
Every photograph is a building of something that still stands. I want the average person to see the ghost towns in those books. And there are three volumes. Each volume has 50 different ghost towns. We tell you the area of the state, the county, what kind of car you need, what kind of road you're driving on, and directions to the tenth of a mile on how to get to it.
Wow.
The compendium is for the hardcore metal detector bottle hunter person that isn't afraid of taking a goat trail or hike into a place that perhaps well, there's nothing left or very little left. A little harder to get to.
Sure.
Yeah, more adventurous.
Yes.
And maybe a little treasure hunting, right?
Absolutely.
And hopefully you don't run into something you don't want to run into.
Right.
I do warn you about rattlesnakes. There are many places such as Greenhorn where you just have to throw rocks where you walk because there are more rattlesnakes than people up there.
I know Galice is in your book for Ghost Town. So Galice, if you're going down the Rogue River, actually, in the Rogue Valley, you can take a float or something, and you end up with the Galice. There's an inn there, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and you can sit outside, and you should try that sometime, Dave.
How do they get their supplies?
Oh, the road goes through it. The road
it's a paved road now.
Grants Pass to the coast. There's a paved road that gets there. So it's a nice little spot, and then they will truck back the people that rented
that floated down. Yeah. Oh, nice.
So, okay. A half mile from the store is the 1859 assay office. That's still there.
1859.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. All right. So Marion Polk County. What ghost town is easily accessible that our listeners should go see?
Oh, gosh. It's easy.
Easy.
Jawbone Flats.
Where's that?
Jawbone Flats.
All right. You head out Highway 22 toward Staten.
Okay.
Continue to the, is it the Saniam River? Goes underneath. There's a restaurant. It used to be Heidi's Restaurant or the Matterhorn. You turn left, take the Elkhorn Drive. You go past Elkhorn to a parking lot. It's a 2-mile hike to Jawbone Flats.
Uh-huh.
Jawbone Flats is a unique ghost town. It originally was a gold mining community, later became a lumber community. There's nothing left now but buildings up there. In the summer, they do open for summer camps. But there are mines that are boarded up that you can see. You can see the structures. They have when they abandoned the town, they didn't bring the cars down. They're lined up side by side.
Really? There were cars there, but not any.
Yes.
Wow.
Washing machines from the 20s and 50, early teens, stoves, fireplace. Everything is, it's neatly done, but they just, they couldn't bring them down, so they left them out for people to look at.
Right here in Marion County.
Correct.
I didn't even know that they mined for gold up here. So
most people don't.
Apparently they weren't all that successful because they're not still doing it like they are in...
Well, most of the creeks and rivers and things like that, they panned in them a lot just to see?
Yes, panning was the most common.
Right.
And then they would go to the hydraulic, which ruined the ground, and then they did what I call the tough guy mining, the hard rock miners with the pick and shovel. Wow. So when you see the mine entrances, that those are the hard rock guys.
Well, if you love Oregon and you love minutia of information, you love history, and you love exploring, I think Steve Arndt's books is the place for you. So it's been great to have you on.
Thank you.
And I want to make sure everybody knows, again, how to find your books. RoadsLessTraveledOregon.com. Sometimes he's at trade shows and fairs and has a booth, or home shows, sells online. Do you ever do speaking engagements?
Oh, gosh. That's pretty much what I'm doing now. I'm going to Coos Bay here in February. I just got back from Happy Valley last week. I'm a regular at the Oregon Trail Museum in Oregon City as a speaker.
So. Wow. So in your retirement, you managed to keep busy. You're not idle at all in retirement.
Second career.
It is.
Yeah. That is great. I can't wait to dive into this. And actually, I wish I had a little bit more leisure time.
Yeah.
And
I could take the whole summer off and go driving.
That's right, but you have to do Newsmakers.
Yeah, I got a job.
All right, so when did first people begin to inhabit what is now Oregon? Guess?
No.
They say 11,000 years ago.
11,000
years
wow.
ago. The Native Americans.
Native Americans either came down from Alaska or up from Mexico.
I like this. There's... And then I'm reading from Oregon Uncommon Facts and Unique Information. Steve was telling us you wrote this when you were laid up for a while, right?
That's correct.
Where'd you get all the data?
Oh, golly. Again, reading a lot from the internet.
Okay. So what are some of the odd names? I mean, Oregon, you have Native American names, of course, and that's hard for people from other areas to pronounce, you know, even things like Tualatin and Multnomah that we're used to. Armet, Beggar's Tick. Bitterlick.
Wow.
Bruce's Bone Creek, Cannibal Mountain. That doesn't sound very hospitable.
No.
Chicken Whistle.
That sounds fun.
Death Ball Rock. This is fascinating. That's a book you can go through a lot. And I think if we could play Trivial Pursuit, nobody would win.
No.
There are some really random things. And I love the fact that you've broken it up into governance, into natural resources, into places, into geography.
35 categories.
35 categories.
Man, you had a lot of time in your hands.
Disaster, religion. Are you going to ever stop doing it?
Probably not.
Probably
not. I love what I'm doing. Love what I'm doing.
Maybe become Oregon's state historian at some point. Well, thank you. They're listening to Newsmakers. This is Brent with Dave. Thank you to Steve Arndt, author of Roads Less Traveled, Oregon. 1430 KYKN.
Len Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.